Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am your host, Coach Rob, and I've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about strength training for cyclists, weightlifting, getting buff, getting bulked, getting jacked, getting ripped, whatever you want to call it. We're going to talk about strength training. We're going to talk about how it actually helps you. We're going to go over some of the physiological mechanisms for building fitness and how strength training has kind of been maligned by coaches for quite a little while now. So first, I have a couple of housekeeping items to get through here. Number one, head on over to the website at tailwind-coaching.com. Head on up to the upper bar there, the menu bar. You'll find a link that says sponsors, and you can click on any of my sponsors. If you click through and purchase something from any of these guys, they throw a few shekels my way, and that helps to pay for hosting and bandwidth costs for the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Helps me keep this free information for all of you. All right, first off, I want to thank Road ID. Road ID speaks when you can't. If the worst should happen and you go out for a ride and find yourself laying in a ditch, or more likely a stranger finds you laying in a ditch, if you got a Road ID on your wrist, they'll at least know who to call and who to notify. Gives your family members a good peace of mind that you have some identification on you, because God knows I don't carry my wallet with me. I don't carry a whole lot of ID with me, no matter what I'm doing. So head on over to Road ID, pick up a Road ID. They're only a few bucks, and it's only a few bucks for peace of mind. I also want to thank the Sufferfest. Dave McQuillan over there at the Sufferfest. May seem strange that I am a coach recommending a video training series, but I'll be honest with you, they fit really well into my training plans, especially in some of the longer days. They're really great for rebuilding some motivation when you've been sitting on the trainer for long, long hours in the dead of winter. Those of you in the Southern Hemisphere, I feel bad for you. I'm looking out my window at 85 degrees and sunny right now in the Northern Hemisphere in August, and it's awesome. But anyway, head on over to the Sufferfest, pick up some of those downloads. Again, click through from the website. They'll throw a few dollars my way. And those things will kick your ass, I promise you. So combine those with my training, and you're going to be a really suffering puppy. U.S. Wellness Meats, organic, grass-fed, no hormones, no preservatives, no fillers, no crap, just good food. Really good stuff from those guys. Head on over and check them out. And the Bulletproof Executive, looking for ways to enhance your performance a little bit without using the illegal stuff. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. No, we don't do that here on the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Head on over to the Bulletproof Executive for a myriad of different ways to enhance your life, from acupressure mats to help you sleep better, to little oxaloacetate tabs to help build some lactic acid resistance. You can check out my post about that in my biohacking section. But head on over to Bulletproof Exec and check out what he's got over there. He also has some really excellent coffee, by the way. Not that I don't love my team sponsor, coffeebeandirect.com, but that's aside from the fact. Anyway, check those out. Like I said, you can find them on the site at tailwind-coaching.com. You can also find a number of ways to contact me. On that site, you can follow me on Twitter at CoachRobDC. You can find me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can email me at CoachRobDC@gmail.com. All right, I'm all caught up on consults. I'm all caught up on training. I've got a number of people who have taken advantage of the training plan support that I've just brought to market and are doing very, very well with that. So check that out. If you're not ready for full-on coaching, download some of those modular plans, and you will actually be able to get my brain wrapped around your schedule and everything else by purchasing that training plan support. It's fairly cheap. It's only $30 a month. You've already laid out for the training plans. $30 a month is a mere pittance to have a good solid brain helping you out. Okay. Speaking of training plans, don't forget the Podcast 10 discount code. For loyal listeners of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, head on over to tailwind-coaching.com. Check out the modular training plans, any of my training plans. Enter the code PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, 1010 at checkout, and you can take 10% off everything in the store. All right, so that's for those of you who are looking for training plans for the coming season, which I might mention, cyclocross is coming. Actually, it's coming very soon. It's coming in, what, 2.5, 3 weeks, something like that. So think about cyclocross plans. My modular cyclocross plan is up there. It's a good plan. It's a killer plan. Think about the build plan, the peak plan, as well as the cyclocross plan, and start thinking about planning your next season and getting all that stuff taken care of. Get your plan set up for the next racing season and get a head start on all the other guys who are going to be chilling out real soon. All right. And finally, I'm asking you, if you're listening to this podcast on iTunes, go ahead and rate it. If you're listening to this podcast on the website or on Stitcher or on Podbean or on any of the other services you might happen to find it on, head on over to iTunes, rate this podcast 5 stars. It helps me reach more people, and it helps me get more information out there. Again, I do not get paid for putting this podcast out there. I do it because I like to share a little bit of information with people, and I really enjoy watching people enjoy riding their bikes. And as most of you probably know, the faster you go, the harder you go, the more you can drop your friends, the more you seem to enjoy racing and riding your bike. So the more people I can reach out to with this kind of information, the more people I can see enjoy it, and the happier I will be. That's really the only reason I do the podcast, is so I can reach out and touch a few people and change a few opinions here and there. And you guys have been great with that. I've got a fair number of ratings up there, and that's moving me up the charts a little bit. And number of downloads is getting better and better and better, so I'm reaching more and more people. And I appreciate you passing it along to your friends, family members, and teammates. So, that being said, let's get into the meat and potatoes of today's podcast. And I'm going to forewarn you, this podcast is very likely going to be a two-part podcast. In this part one here, we're going to talk about basically the concept of strength training for cycling, and we're going to talk about the physiology involved in endurance improvements and strength improvements, because I will be perfectly honest with you, you have to be able to understand what's going on in order to properly use strength training in order to improve your cycling performance. So, with that all being said, what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to take a real quick break here, grab a little bit of a drink, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about strength training and weightlifting for cyclists. All right, folks, here we go. Strength training for cyclists. This has been a, how do I put it? This has been a controversial topic for quite a while. And it seems to have been confidential. Yeah, it's been confidential. Well, it has been confidential, but it's been controversial for a number of reasons. And I'm not going to really get into those reasons because it's just not really worth it. But suffice to say, it typically has only been used by track type athletes, kilo racers, 500 meter racers, prologue and pursuit guys, things like that. Strength training, really, from a non-professional standpoint or from an amateur standpoint, has really been thought to have very little effect on overall cycling fitness and overall cycling ability. However, I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you that any coach that tells you that strength training is a waste of time is either A, simply just not aware of the physiological components of strength training as it relates to endurance exercise and how strength really applies to riding a bike, or they're simply just never done any strength training, or they simply are just a real old school type of coach that thinks you just need to ride your bike about 20 hours a week. Here's a little tip for you. 20 hours a week isn't going to get you strong, okay? What it will get you is tired. So think about that a little bit. But anyway, why? Why do we strength train? This is the first thing that we need to sort of tease out and determine. Why? Well, let's go back to what is our ultimate goal. Our ultimate goal when we're riding a bike is to be faster. Well, how do we get faster? A quick, simple, and easy answer of to how to get faster is to increase our power. All right. Now, going into a physics realm, what is power? Power is simply work divided by a unit of time. So how much work you can do in any given unit of time. All right. So this gives us a couple of different parameters to work within here. Work, well, let me back up here. Power in terms of physics, work being time, is equated to the amount of force you put through the pedals and how fast you spin the pedals. So, with that in mind, we have multiple ways of increasing the amount of power we can put out. And you can, well, you can test this out on the road, but let's figure this out first. You can increase your power by increasing the amount of work or the force production that you're putting into the pedals, or you can increase number of times you're performing that work. So increasing the cadence or adding work cycles in a minute. So if you're thinking about this, you're putting out 90 watts at 90 revolutions per minute, you're putting out 1 watt per revolution. If you're putting out 180 watts at 90 RPM, you're putting out 2 watts per revolution. So you've doubled the amount of work while keeping the time the same. All right, so you've basically doubled your power. All right, so this equation makes it very simple to see that you can increase your power by either spinning any given gear faster than what you're doing right now, or by increasing the amount of power, the amount of work you're putting into the pedals. Increasing the amount of work by you're putting into the pedals has a couple of options. You can either stand up and push harder, you can shift to a harder gear, etc., etc. So there are a couple different ways to do that. But the biggest thing, and let me again back up 1 second, you can very easily note this. Go outside, get yourself on a flat road and spin at 90 RPM and look at your Garmin, look at your power control, look at whatever you're using, your PowerTap head unit, your Pioneer head unit, your phone, whatever you happen to be using. And look at your power numbers. All right, now add 10, 20, 30 RPM to your actual cadence and see what your power numbers do. They go up, right? They go up. That's what happens. And I'll go out there, go on that same flat road, and I want you to do this experiment. I want you to pedal along at 90 RPM. And again, look at your PowerTap head unit or your Garmin or your PC7 or whatever you're using. Look at your power. Now shift to a harder gear and keep pedaling at that 90 RPM. What happens? Your power goes up. It's pretty obvious. This is stuff that you guys already all know. The thing that we need to understand is that if we break down the concept of power, it's broken down into work times time. Work is equal to force times time. All right, so time is equal to cadence. Now we have power equals force times cadence. Force is the amount of force you can put into the pedals, which is determined by anybody? Muscular strength. Exactly. The other side of the equation is speed. That is a neuromuscular ability to turn over the legs fast, okay? And to properly recruit motor units. Motor units are simply a group of muscle fibers innervated by a single nerve. Okay, those have to all be coordinated to fire at the same time in order to spin the gears quickly and smoothly and powerfully. But that's for the second part of this podcast, really. But anyway, there is quite a bit of the reliance on force production in power. Okay. And not only does force production work in terms of increasing power, it also does help to increase aerobic fitness via an increase in mitochondrial density. There are a few studies out there that show this in terms of high intensity interval training and in terms of mitochondrial density changes with strength training. Now, the biggest problem is choosing which of those two to train and when to train them. That is really the key to using strength training to improve your cycling fitness. Excuse me. But before we get into how to really get a lot of effect out of strength training, we have to understand how strength and aerobic fitness and whatnot all sort of meld together and feed off of each other. And to understand that, we have to understand that there are various pathways involved in exercise and formation of endurance and endurance fitness, all right? So we have to understand these to understand why strength training really works and how it works with other pathways so that we can really maximize the output we get from all of those pathways in order to get the best strength to speed ratio, which gives us the best power, you know, which gives us the most speed on the bike, which gives us the most ability to drop our friends, which gives us the biggest smile out on the Saturday or Sunday morning group ride, or gives us the chance to sprint for the win in that local criterium, or be able to take the win in that local cyclocross race, for those of you who have cyclocross on the brain right now. But I digress. Let's get started with some of that physiology here. First of all, we're going to talk about the endurance pathways, how we build endurance, and how those work with the strength-building pathways that we will need to use in order to build some strength. We'll cover that in just 1 minute. All right, here we are back. We're going to talk about endurance, exercise, improving pathways. And we're going to start off what's called the CAMKS pathway, the calcium-calmodulin pathway. This is a pathway that generally works on slow twitch muscle fibers. These are, if you've ever taken apart a chicken, you'll know there's a dark meat and white meat. The white meat tends to be on the breast. The dark meat tends to be on the thighs and on the legs and drumsticks and things like that. What that dark meat essentially is meat that is, or muscle. Basically, when you're eating any kind of animal, you're eating muscle, unless you're eating heart, liver, organ meat, which that's an entirely different podcast. That's a nutrition podcast, and it seems to raise people's dander when I talk about nutrition because it's a little unorthodox the way I handle it, but I digress anyway. When you are eating any dark meat on any animal, you're actually eating a slow-twitch muscle fiber, which is high in mitochondria and hemoglobin. That's why it's a much darker red than, say, a breast meat, which is basically a fast-twitch muscle fiber, doesn't have a lot of mitochondria in it, relatively speaking, per unit volume. Anyway, the calcium-calmodulin pathway, the CAMKS, the calcium-MK pathway, is a very, very long, slow aerobic exercise adaptation. And the way it improves long, slow adaptation or exercise adaptation is by increasing mitochondrial density, generally in slow twitch muscle fibers, as I said. There is mitochondrial biogenesis, which happens in the type 2X fibers, the mid-range fast twitch fibers and the slow twitch fibers. It also helps to really change muscle phenotype, which for those of you who are laypersons, this basically means that you can take a fast twitch muscle fiber and by consistently working it at a long slow duration, you can build enough mitochondria to turn it into a more slow twitch fiber. It's important to note that this calcium MK pathway is not necessarily required to do that, but it has the ability to do that. So you've heard about guys like Torhushov or people like that who have become, let's call it, they've become more classics guys. They've become things like that. Those are guys who are turning some of their fast twitch muscles into slower twitch fibers or slow twitch type fibers. And that's really done by that calcium MKS pathway. It is actually activated during hypertrophic growth phases and with endurance adaptations. Endurance adaptations tend to be aerobic stress on the system. This, we're talking about those long, slow miles. We're talking about those 3-hour rides at about 50% of functional threshold power. those rides that I hate, those rides that I don't use a lot of in my training plans, although there are some. Mostly my training plans use these rides as bases for skill-based work, you know, single leg drills and spin-ups and things like that, things that are neuromuscular skills in general, are all built into a background of long, slow distance, which activates this calcium MKS pathway, all right? This this pathway is generally it's activated by altered functional demand in the muscle, okay, and the muscle fibers themselves and the aerobic system overall, and according to a couple of studies, it triggers an adaptation that is dose-dependently related to the activation level, end quote. And what that essentially means translated is that the adaptation that you get from these long, slow miles is really dose-dependent. So if you do more work, you get more adaptation, more benefit up to a certain point, of course. There is always a point of negative return on these kind of things. So this is probably the most primitive pathway that we're utilizing as cyclists. It's really the pathway that I kind of hate using as a cyclist. It is actually quite valuable, I will have to say, though, because what it does do, in addition to increasing mitochondrial density, it increases capillary density, it increases aerobic enzyme production, things like that. And it is a very important thing to have in your training. However, you don't want to be doing like pros do, 5 hours a day of this kind of training. It's not economical for an amateur cyclist looking to get stronger, get faster, tackle a group ride or a century or something like that. It's simply unnecessary. But the take home for the calcium MKS pathway is basically this, and remember this, the frequency, the duty cycle or the intensity, or I should say the length of time of an activity and the intensity of an activity causes this pathway to adapt both those aerobic changes, those aerobic enzyme changes, those mitochondrial density changes, those capillary density changes, and the adaptation of mid-fast twitch to slow twitch muscle fibers. Okay, again, through those very specific enzymatic pathways and mitochondrial densities and things like that. So calcium, calmodulin pathway, sort of the long, slow distance pathway, if you will. Now, we get into the AMPK pathway, which is generally a little bit slow twitch, but somewhat fast twitch as well. It's like that type 2X, that transitional fiber, which is considered like a fast twitch aerobic kind of fiber. This is your high intensity interval training pathway. And this is the one that there's a lot of research out there showing that high intensity interval work really has very similar benefits to long, slow, prolonged distance work. The reason why it has very similar effects to that long, slow distance work in much shorter time is because of this AMPK pathway. Now, AMPK pathway, I'm going to point out, adenosine monophosphate kinase activating pathway. To understand this, you know, and I've talked about many times, ATP, adenosine triphosphate, is the energy currency of the cell. In the cell, that ATP, that adenosine triphosphate, is split into an ADP, an adenosine diphosphate molecule and a free phosphate, and tends to release a hydrogen ion at that point through the electron transport chain in the Krebs cycle. That splitting of that free organic phosphate off of that ADP molecule creates a release of energy. That energy is what is used to actually power cellular function. Now, what I've not discussed in the past is the fact that that adenosine diphosphate can again be split. You'll get another free phosphate out of it, and you will be reduced to an AMP molecule, an adenosine monophosphate molecule, and again, another free inorganic phosphate. So, this process creates what's called an AMP to ATP ratio, okay? And that's what activates this adenosine monophosphate kinase pathway. This pathway is generally a catabolic pathway in nature, okay? And there's a difference between catabolic, which destroys muscle tissue and bodily tissue in order to fuel something or breaks down something, and an anabolic pathway, which builds something. So keep that in mind as we talk about catabolic. This AMPK pathway is a master switch, if you will, that it regulates glucose uptake into muscle cells. It regulates beta oxidation of fatty acids and fatty acid storage within muscle cells. It regulates mitochondrial formation within muscle cells. It regulates enzymatic production and upregulation within cells. And that's both anaerobic and aerobic enzyme production. So it works through a lot of different pathways, and it regulates a lot of different pathways that are very, very important in terms of exercise adaptation. And again, I said it works by detecting the fluctuations in the AMP to ATP ratio in the cell and in the intermuscular fluid during muscle usage and rest. Now, typically at rest, AMP to ATP is a very small ratio. You do not have much AMP. Energy needs for the body are being met by ATP via beta oxidation of fats and a little bit of oxidation of carbohydrates. But during exercise, when you expend a lot of ATP very quickly, and a little hint, this is sort of the idea behind Watt Prime work in Golden Cheetah. That'll be somewhere down the line. I'll talk about that. But think about that while you're looking at your Golden Cheetah stuff. But when you expend a lot of ATP very quickly, you end up building up a lot of AMP as opposed to that ATP that activates this adenosine monophosphate kinase pathway. So basically, it increases or activates during a exercise session in which muscle cells experience metabolic stress caused by a demand for ATP. So you go out, you do a high-intensity interval workout. Say you're doing three sets of five track sprints from a standing stop or a rolling stop, 2-3 mile rolling start. That's going to really quickly drain that ATP ratio. You're going to start activating that AMPK pathway. And what this does, the AMPK pathway actually increases cellular energy levels. Note it says increases, but it's a catabolic pathway. Well, yes, it is, because it increases cellular energy levels by inhibiting anabolic energy-consuming pathways. Let me go through that again. It actually increases cellular energy levels by inhibiting anabolic pathways, energy-consuming anabolic pathways. This is why it is a catabolic process. It also causes protein breakdown, it causes protein breakdown into constituent amino acids and uses them for energy. It also transports glucose into the cell out of the bloodstream instead of putting it into an anabolic pathway of muscle growth or mitochondrial growth, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, I know I said it increases mitochondrial density. I'll get to that in just a minute. Anyway, the inhibition of anabolic pathways are things like fatty acid synthesis, Okay, it causes beta oxidation of fatty acids that are floating around in the bloodstream and in the muscle. It inhibits protein synthesis. It, like I said, it causes catabolic protein breakdown into constituents. And it also creates a quick transport of glucose into the cell for use instead of shuttling it into fat storage or into the liver, etc. All right. This pathway is interesting in the fact that even though it's catabolic, it helps to really increase energy levels. All right. So that's actually how it increases mitochondrial density. Under stress, your body is stressed from a high intensity workout. All right. That high intensity workout depletes the adenosine triphosphate, the ATP, in that cell, which is the cell's energy currency. That increases the amount of AMP in the cell. The increased AMP to ATP ratio activates adenosine monophosphate kinase, AMPK. That causes an increase in glucose transport into the cell, increase in beta oxidation of fat, increase use of branched chain amino acids. In order to do that, the body requires an increase in mitochondrial density, as these are the powerhouses of the cell that create energy. So, what happens when you go for a high-intensity workout? Well, your body activates this pathway and it starts to build fresh mitochondria. This pathway does get shut down pretty quickly, though, and we'll get into that in the second part of this podcast. But that's essentially all we're going to talk about here. It's a quick overview, and I know I've left a lot of stuff out of this, and I've left a lot of ends dangling here, but this is just a real quick physiological overview of the endurance-based pathways, okay? The endurance-based pathways are typically what you would think cycling is all about. I go out, I ride my bike for those long, slow hours to get my, quote, I'm doing my air quotes right now, base miles. And then I go out later in the season as I start building towards my races and I start doing more high-intensity work, more VO2 max work, more zone 6 work, more zone 7 work so that I can learn how to sprint and things like that. Well, let me tell you guys, you're actually completely ignoring one more pathway that is pretty essential to producing power. We're going to talk about that right after I take a real quick break, and we're going to talk about what probably has the coolest name of any pathway in the body. All right, back to talk about what might be the coolest pathway in the human body. We're going to talk about the mTOR. I have to say it that way every time I'm going to say this pathway. I got to say mTOR. It sounds like just awesome. You know, it's like whoever named this thing probably was like a heavy metal, like rock star, you know, who's just like, I got to find a cool name for this thing. You know, they're looking at their bandmates and they're like, yeah, what do we name this? mTOR! Okay. Yeah, anyway, that's not it. I'm really just a kid at heart, and I love just acting like kind of a doofus, so it's just kind of really cool to get up there and say mTOR! Yeah, mTOR, the mTOR pathway, or mTORC1 pathway, the mammalian target of rapamycin pathway, is an anabolic pathway. It's generally anabolic in nature. mTOR itself, both complex 1, complex 2. They're a serine threonine kinase complex, and there are actually two of them in your body that we're going to be concerned about, but typically really only one of them applies to exercise and fitness adaptation. I'm going to get this out of the way right now. mTOR complex 2, or mTORC2, controls cellular survival. As an interesting side note, mTORC2 has been implicated in a lot of ancestral kind of diseases or hereditary kind of diseases. Alzheimer's has been one of them. Some cancers are another one. But that actually is that's a whole different podcast and a whole different topic, not even related to training and fitness. So I'm going to leave that to the research type cancer research type and Alzheimer's research type people to deal with that one. But we're going to focus on the mTOR complex one, or mTORC one.
mTOR.
One of these days that's going to get old, I know. But anyway, complex one. mTOR complex one. Really, this complex integrates many, many signals reflecting growth factor availability, nutrient availability in specific amino acid balance in the body, and energy availability. This sounds quite a bit like the adenosine monophosphate kinase pathway. Oof, that's a tongue twister. This sounds quite a bit like the adenosine monophosphate kinase pathway. However, it's distinctly different in the fact that it is a anabolic pathway. All right, mTORC1.
mTOR.
I told you one of these days is going to get old. mTOR1 actually promotes cellular growth when conditions are favorable to anabolic processes. And in that respect, we're talking a positive amino acid balance. We're talking a high ATP to AMP or low AMP to ATP ratio, depending on which way you want to look at it. Also activated, mTORC1 is also really activated by growth factors. So IGF-1, insulin release after a meal. HGH is another hormone that actually acts upon mTORC1. Testosterone, which is an anabolic hormone, actually has an activation site for mTORC1. So growth factors and growth-based hormones, including insulin, are activators of mTORC1.
mTOR!
Really, when I sat down to write my show notes for this podcast, I very liberally sprinkled the abbreviation mTOR throughout these notes. Yeah, you might get that a few more times, so I apologize in advance. remember and recall from the previous section when we talked about AMPK that low levels of ATP stimulate AMPK. It's also worth noting that low levels of ATP also stimulate AMPK-dependent inhibition of mTORC1. That basically means that AMPK inhibits the activation of mTORC1. All right. On the opposite side of that, positive ATP balance and significant amino acid availability activates mTORC1. This is sort of an evolutionary process whereby the rest and digest process will help to increase muscle building capacity. All right? Think about it in this respect. Human beings are evolutionarily designed as hunter-gatherer kind of creatures. Think of a caveman who has to stalk his prey, chase it down, struggle with it to kill it, then take it back, drag it back, cut it up, and eat it. What are the pathways involved here? Well, stalking your prey would be akin to using that CAMKS pathway, that calcium calmodulin pathway. Chasing down your prey and catching it would be high intensity in nature, would be very similar to that adenosine monophosphate kinase pathway. Struggling with your prey would be the equivalent of strength training, which, here's a little secret, strength training activates that mTOR pathway.
mTOR.
Activates that mTORC1 pathway. And then dragging it back to your cave to eat it. Again, a little bit of both AMPK, well, probably not AMPK unless you're really trying to hoof it back there, but there's also some strength involved there. That mTORC1 signal is going off when you actually eat that tasty animal. You get a nice feed of fat and a lot of amino acids, those branched-chain amino acids, which actually helps to activate mTORC1. So while you're resting and digesting that tasty animal with all of its amino acids, you're building increased muscle mass so that you can go out and do it again. The stalking and running that you did while you were chasing the creature down will actually activate pathways, AMPK and calcium calmodulin, which help you increase your stamina and your endurance in order to chase something longer and faster. So these are how these things work together. Now, mTORC1, as I said, is inactivated by AMPK. You can either be utilizing one pathway or the other. You can't have it both ways. You can't have low ATP with AMPK running rampant and still have strength gains going on through the mTOR pathway.
mTOR.
Yeah, whatever. mTOR1 activates when it's activated, affects messenger RNA translation. It suppresses autophagy, which is chewing up of dead cells. It stimulates ribosome biogenesis, which the cellular protein producers. It activates messenger RNA transcription for mitochondrial production. It also helps to build myonuclei to increase the strength, size, and fatigue resistance of muscular fibers. So, again, as I said, the complex 2 controls cellular survival. That's the autophagy. And complex 2 also regulates cytoskeletal dynamics, ion transport, cellular growth through phosphorylation of several enzymes. So it does have some effect, but not very much. Complex 1 also does a lot of that as well. The take-home message here is that mTORC1, or the mTOR pathway in general, is a very anabolic pathway which is designed to build muscular strength, muscular size, and muscular fitness. All right, it does not build endurance fitness, folks. This is your fast twitch system. This is your go into the gym and start freaking deadlifting like 300 pounds to make yourself wickedly strong and have quads that look like, you know, Jan Ulrich's, you know, quads. It's nothing quite like having quads the size of your own head. That's what this mTORC pathway does, and that's where you have the effects of HGH and testosterone and all of those big muscle-producing steroid hormones. All right. So now you know what the strength production pathway is. What are the take-homes here in terms of physiology of endurance training, physiology of strength training? I'll go over those after just a real quick break because, honestly, saying
mTOR
all the time is really hard on my throat. So I'll be right back after just a quick moment. All right, here we go. Back to go over the take-homes of strength training physiology for cyclists. Well, listen up, folks. This is basically what you need to know in order to start thinking about how to maximize your strength training gains and turn them into cycling fitness gains. Number one, high-intensity interval training, or the AMPK pathway, and also to some extent, the CAMKS, the calcium calmodulin pathway, increase mitochondrial size and mitochondrial density in slow twitch, and which are type 1, and type 2X, or fast twitch aerobic fibers. They also have some role in turning type 2X fast twitch aerobic fibers into type 1 slow twitch fibers as well. They increase oxidative enzymes within the cells. These enzymes are things like citrate synthase, malate dehydrogenase, succinate dehydrogenase, all those enzymes that are involved in the Krebs cycle and the citric acid cycle. Right. They allow you to go longer, and they allow you to go harder by increasing metabolic function, basically better fatty acid utilization, better beta oxidation of fats, better carbohydrate utilization through increased mitochondrial size and density and increased oxidative enzymes. They also, it's worth noting here. This is not an also, this is a worth noting. These do increase mitochondrial density and mitochondrial size, but not necessarily contractile force or strength in muscle tissue. That has to be stressed. That is the realm of the mTOR pathways, the mammalian target of rapamycin pathways. You must be able, this is a pretty big point here, folks, and I'm going to repeat it, you must be able to produce increased contractile forces in order to turn the pedals over harder. Let me repeat that. You must be able to produce increased contractile forces in order to turn the pedals over harder. Okay? I'm not talking about endurance in this case. I'm talking about flat-out raw ability to produce force, the amount your body can, quote, lift with each pedal stroke. Okay? This is not much different, folks, than doing one-legged squats. Okay? Pedaling a bike, especially up a steep grade while you're sitting there, is just like doing pistol squats. They suck. I'm just going to tell you that flat out. All right. So if you want to be able to push the pedals harder, or you want to be able to push a little bit more force into those, you have to be able to produce more force in general. Building of endurance or cardiovascular fitness is done by that AMPK pathway, that calcium calmodulin pathway, and not really much else. All right. Those are necessary for you to be successful as a long distance rider or even as a racer. You cannot get away with not working on your aerobic endurance as a short distance, say a criterium racer. You have to have that endurance reserve to be able to race. But this is especially important for people like century riders, fondo riders, long distance racers, brevet riders, multi-day stage race riders, things like that. Oxygen delivery and energy balance is regulated by these two pathways, these AMPK and calcium calmodulin pathways. So these work on the endurance side of the equation. These biochemical changes that occur, these occur at a cellular level. They increase that aerobic endurance capacity. And again, they don't increase force production or muscular endurance capacity. All right. And muscular endurance, as you know, from all the other, you know, podcasts and all the posts that I've written and all the coaching that I've done, muscular endurance is the ability to produce force continuously and repeatedly, otherwise known as fatigue resistance. How long can you go without being tired, without popping, without blowing up? All right. And in order to increase that muscular strength, that muscular endurance, that muscular fatigue resistance, you need that mTOR pathway. And again, it's either that AMPK pathway, which is turned on, or that mTORC pathway, which is turned on. You can't have them both at the same time. One shuts off the other. So mTOR, take home. mTOR builds muscular hypertrophy, contractile strength, and force. mTOR is very easily activated by an increase in branched chain amino acids in the system, so high protein meals. That protein that you do, you watch weightlifters, they do a protein shake after they lift. That's so that they can really reap the benefit of this mTOR pathway as much as possible. And we're going to go over that in the second part of this podcast, which will have some nutritional tips and tricks and how to get more benefit out of your workouts. Again, mTOR is actually activated by strength training itself. It's also prolonged by that BCAA concentration in the body. It results in significant muscle hypertrophy and increased mitochondrial density in fast twitch fibers. That's probably something I may have left out of the mTOR overview or a little bit earlier. That mitochondrial density increase is in those fast twitch fibers, those type 2A fibers, I'm sorry, those type 2A fibers. I think back to my college ex-phys for a minute. Those type 2A fibers, those pure fast twitch fibers. That's the other reason why mTOR doesn't have a lot to do with endurance exercise. It doesn't really act on type 1 fibers or type 2X fibers. Well, it does act on type 2X, but not really type 1 fibers. So something else to take home. Muscle hypertrophy, increased mitochondrial density in type 2A and B or type 2A and 2X fibers. Now, one of the other small intakes or take-homes here is that increased muscle hypertrophy, contractile strength and force actually increases venous return to the heart, which increases stroke volume out of the heart, which increases the amount of blood that is sent to the lungs for oxygenation, which increases the amount of oxygen-carrying capacity in the blood. It's dependent upon those aerobic endurance pathways to create capillary density, which will allow the muscles to actually use that increased stroke volume capacity. All right? That's an awful lot of scientific, heavy scientific physiology shoved at you in about, give or take, about 40 minutes worth of podcast. I'm going to leave this as a two-part podcast because I sincerely believe that those of you who are going to listen to this and are going to be interested in this may want to listen to it once or twice, maybe a couple times, to really understand what's going on here. And please, 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 if you are curious about something or you have questions about something, do not hesitate to contact me. I can be reached coachrobdc@gmail.com. I love having physiology discussions with people. I love explaining the deep down physiology of why you get better when you train, when you race, when you lift weights, or why you get worse when you get fat and sit on the couch. I love to debate nutrition stuff, things like that. So go ahead, shoot me an email, coachrobdc@gmail.com. Post your question on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. Find me on Twitter, coachrobdc on Twitter. And shoot me any of your questions about physiology here if there's something I need to clear up. If I do have any questions that are put my way, I very well may clear those up in the beginning of the next podcast. Which, speaking of... Yes, I do have show notes for the next podcast already started and actually almost all finished here, really. Specific strength training protocols, I'll cover those in the next podcast. I'll cover some specific ways of integrating your strength training into your cycling in order to adapt that strength onto the bike. I'll give you some specific nutritional tips and tricks for increasing AMPK, mTOR, and calcium calmodulin. And... I'll give you a few tips about the concept of exercise timing, how that relates to exercise nutrition, and how that relates to the finely balancing different pathways, the mTOR pathway.
mTOR!
Had to do one more for the road. The AMP pathway and the calcium MKS pathway. So there will be a lot of stuff covered that's going to be less academic and more applied science in the next podcast. So keep an eye out for that specific strength training for cyclists podcast part 2. I think that might actually be podcast number 41, something like that. But until then, don't forget, head on over to iTunes, rate the podcast 5 stars if you like what you're hearing. Shoot me any questions, coachrobdc@gmail.com, coachrobdc on Twitter. The Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, and head on over to the website at tailwind-coaching.com, and you can even post questions underneath this post on the website. So, until the next time, when we talk about specific strength training protocols and on-bike work and such and so forth for part 2 of this podcast, keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down, be smart about your training, go out there, be awesome, kick ass, and I will talk to you really soon.